Are you or is someone you love accident prone? One of those folks that gets in a car accident every year or two, like a big one. One of those folks who touches stuff and it breaks. Now imagine that friend of yours as the captain of a schooner, a sailing ship, back in the days of sail. And you've got the rascaliest sea captain to ever set foot in an Oregon port, a 19th century Han Solo, a fellow named Jimmy Jones. Jimmy Jones actually has an island in Canada named after him because he crashed his boat into it. I've got to tell you the story of Jimmy Jones. It's one of my very favorite stories, but first I'd better introduce myself. My name is Finn J.D. John. I write a weekly newspaper column that runs in about a dozen papers around the state right now, and it's called Offbeat Oregon History. I've been writing it since 2008, and right now there are about 175 published episodes in the kitty. So every morning I pull one of those episodes up out of the archives and put it out on the daily RSS feeds. One in text and pictures for your newsreader, and one in audio only for your podcatcher. Offbeat Oregon History is the column that tells the stories of Oregon history that nobody knows about, or the stories that everyone has forgotten. Stories of heroes and rascals, of shipwrecks and lost gold, of shanghaied sailors and Skid Row bordellos and pirates and robbers and buried treasure and unsolved mysteries. And today's episode is a little bit of all of those things, I think. It was first published on October 10th, 2011. I'm going to tell it to you now. There was no reason why the U.S. Marshal should spend the night on board the Jenny Jones, the cramped, smelly little freight schooner he was in charge of. After all, the ship was anchored in a semi-civilized town, Steilacoom, up in the Washington Territory, and there were several quite decent hotels there. The next day he'd have a few hours' cruise to Seattle, where the ship would be sold to pay the debts of its owner, Captain James Jemmy Jones. So did you get that? Jenny Jones was the name of the ship. Jemmy Jones was its skipper. Confusing, yes, but back to our story. It seems that the previous year, when his ship was aground on the deadly Columbia River Bar, Captain Jones had thrown a bunch of freight overboard to lighten the ship and float it free of the sand. The freight's owners in Portland had been able to convince a judge that it was through Jones' recklessness in choosing to cross the bar without a pilot that this had to be done. This was probably a miscarriage of justice. The reason there was no pilot available was because conditions in the open sea beyond the bar were too dangerous to send them out. And also, if you know anything about the business class of Portland in the pre-Civil War era, they were a bunch of sharks. But in any case, Jones had shown no sign of complying with the judge's orders to pay up, so now the government had seized his ship. It had been pretty easy to seize, too. Jones had gotten himself into some trouble in Canada just before the marshal moved in. At that very moment, he was languishing in a jail cell up in the town of Victoria, far to the north. By the time he made bail, his ship would be history and his debts would be paid. That's what the marshal thought as he checked into his hotel room for the night. But that wasn't quite what was going on. What the marshal didn't know was that Captain Jemmy Jones, one of the rascaliest skippers in West Coast maritime history, and most certainly one of the most resourceful as well, had escaped. With the help of some friends, he'd tarted himself up in a dress and bonnet. He had then strutted unnoticed past the guards, and then actually paddled across the Strait of Juan de Fuca in a canoe. That's 11 miles of open sea in February. Paddled across the Strait of Juan de Fuca to get back home to the U.S. And that is when he learned that his ship had been seized by the U.S. Marshal's office. Time to give up? Not for Jemmy Jones. The intrepid or desperate captain had headed on down to Olympia to find his repossessed ship. Once he found it, he had booked passage on it as a passenger. So unbeknownst to the marshal, Jemmy had been on board the ship the whole time. It's tempting to picture Jemmy with a hat pulled down low over his forehead to hide his face, furtively watching and smiling as the marshal stepped ashore and walked out of sight. The marshal left the ship in charge of his assistant, and when early the next morning the assistant went ashore to talk to his boss about something, leaving the ship wholly unsupervised, Jemmy saw his chance. After getting reacquainted with the schooner's crew, the wily skipper got right to work, implementing phase two of his most audacious plan ever, the theft of his own ship from right under the nose of the law. But before I tell you about how that went down, let me tell you a little background about Captain Jemmy. Welshman James Jemmy Jones had come to the West Coast in 1849 for the California Gold Rush. He'd been lucky in the gold fields, and soon he had a grub stake together big enough to outfit himself with a freight ship and go into business as a skipper. As a sea captain, Jemmy turned out to be a marvel in a kind of 19th century Han Solo kind of way. Historian James McCurdy calls him, quote, a veritable stormy petrel, always in some trouble or another on the high seas. Five of his ships sank or broke up under him. His third shipwreck earned him a place in the geography books when he crashed his schooner into a small island right in the harbor at Victoria, the island that today is known as Jemmy Jones Island. The incident on the Columbia Bar, had it gone the way such groundings usually did, would have been a shipwreck as well, and given the survival rates for ships broken up on the bar, probably his last. That incident on the bar may have been Jemmy's inspiration for the innovation that would put him in the history books as well as the geography ones. Crossing the bar in a sailing ship was, and still is, a very dangerous endeavor. The place is peppered with wind shadows in which a sailing ship can suddenly find itself drifting becalmed at the mercy of the currents, which run right across sandbars too shallow for a ship. Steamers had a much easier time staying in the channel, but their big paddle wheels got in the way and made all but the simplest sailing moves impossible. But a new kind of propulsion system had just recently been invented, the screw propeller, that solved that problem. So, Jemmy thinks, why not put a steam engine in his sailing ship? And so it was that in 1864, the Jenny Jones became the first ship of the type that would become known as a steam schooner, a trim wooden sailing schooner with a modest steam engine below decks. Jemmy had invented probably the most important type of ship in the history of the West Coast. You'll sometimes hear the invention of the steam schooner credited to a less disreputable innovator who did the same thing to a lumber schooner in San Francisco 15 years later, but that is simply incorrect. Jemmy did it first. With his innovative new power setup, Jemmy started making profitable runs from Portland to Victoria late in 1864. But apparently he wasn't making the money fast enough to pay his Portland creditors. They'd called upon the law to help them collect, and as a result, if Jemmy Jones wanted his schooner back, he was going to have to steal it and become a federal fugitive. In Instilicum on that day, Jemmy got busy doing exactly that. Having a steam engine on board made Jones' escape from the marshal at Steilacoom that much easier. They must have been building steam already for the day's journey to Seattle, or perhaps the crew had been secretly getting ready all along. In any case, as soon as the long arm of the law headed off to breakfast, the Jenny Jones headed off to the open sea. The reaction to the lawmen when they saw the empty slip where they'd left their 95-foot, several-hundred-ton charge is lost to history. Maybe it's just as well. Meanwhile, Jones and crew were out at sea with very little fuel in the bunkers and not much food in the cupboards, and now they were wanted men in both the U.S. and Canada. Jones managed to get the ship to Port Ludlow, where they loaded a couple cords of firewood on board and cast off again quick. This load was enough to get the ship to Nanaimo, which Jemmy apparently hoped would be remote enough to not yet know him as an outlaw. No such luck. Although they didn't try to arrest him at Nanaimo, neither would they sell him coal. So instead he hired some Native Americans to help him load about 12 tons of coal dust from a nearby abandoned coal dump. Another stop in a third port brought a big load of cordwood to mix with the coal dust, and then the Jenny Jones was ready for the open sea and Mexico, the only country in North America that didn't have a warrant out for his arrest. Along the way, the outlaw mariners encountered a waterlogged sloop, the Deerfoot, whose exhausted crew of three had been laboring mightily trying to keep her afloat and were steadily losing the battle. The crew begged to be taken off, and Jones was happy to oblige. They also took off the sloop's cargo of food provisions. With that, the crew of the little steam schooner had everything they needed for their journey. Under sail and steam both, the Jenny Jones headed south, arriving in Mexico 25 days later. There, Jones started running freight again, but after some labor-related drama involving the rescued crew of the Deerfoot, in which someone stole the rudder off his ship, Jones gave up in disgust, sold the Jenny Jones for $10,000, and headed for home. When the ship Jemmy was on got to San Francisco, he stepped boldly and casually onto the shore as if he had nothing to hide and nothing to worry about. Of course, he was arrested almost immediately when the authorities realized he was in town. The records are silent on this, but one imagines him as unworried, confident, a little cocky. Kind of like James Gardner's character in the Rockford Files. In court, Jemmy's defense was that he had not actually escaped from the marshal. Rather, the marshal had abandoned his charge and he, finding it unattended there in the harbor, had simply recovered his property. The judge agreed, the case was dismissed, and Jones' creditors had to sue the marshal for their $4,600. I haven't been able to learn if they got it or not. Jones was also arrested and tried on criminal charges in Steilacoom, but he was acquitted. The Jenny Jones disappeared into obscurity in Mexico. Perhaps she was simply too ahead of her time. Another steam schooner would not be built until roughly 1880, at which time the type would revolutionize West Coast transportation. As for Captain Jemmy, he moved back to British Columbia and for years skippered a small schooner, not a steamer this time, called Industry, aboard which he almost died in a fifth and final shipwreck in 1878. He died a few years later in his early 50s after having become mentally unhinged. It must be said that in Jemmy's day, most often when men in late middle age went crazy and died, syphilis was the cause, Christopher Columbus being the most well-known example. I have not been able to determine if this was the case with Jemmy Jones or if something else, head trauma, for example, or maybe alcoholism, might have caused his demise. But most people will agree that the world was a less colorful place after he left it. That's all I've got for you today. You can read any archive column and subscribe to either daily feed by going to the website at offbeatoregon.com. Both feeds are optimized for smartphone use, but they work great on a tablet or a netbook or even an old-fashioned computer. All the columns are copyrighted, but they're covered under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license, which means if you want to use them for something, as long as you give me credit, pretty much open door. Thanks for listening, and do drop me a line if you're ever in Corvallis and have time for a cup of coffee. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. Thanks again. Have a great day.